You're listening to the Katakalam Project on Katakalam Media. I'm your host, Chi Ting Ye. So I'm here with Carlos Templeman, the director of Stanford University's Taiwan Democracy Project at the CDDRL, the Center on Democracy, Development, Rule of Law. I said that in one breath. Should be impressed.
Congratulations.
let me see. And I'm also here with Dennis Wang, who is a visiting assistant professor at Wesleyan College in political science.
Wesleyan University.
We're here, so today is December 2nd, so it's 3 days after the historical, dramatic, catastrophic, however you want to call it, local elections in Taiwan, which has been the biggest in terms of a number of seats elected, and also the results, which have been staggering in many ways. So before we go on, I was just wondering if, Carlos, you want to just run down quickly why the results were so shocking or what the actual results were.
Right. Sure. So the November 29th elections featured all local races below the presidency and the legislature. Everything else was on the ballot. And the results were shocking in part because they were lopsidedly in favor of the DPP in races that were expected to be close. And they were close, and the DPP pulled a couple of upsets in races that were expected to favor the KMT. And that pattern was consistent around the island. This was not a matter of individual candidates doing particularly well in special areas. In fact, of all the races, Taipei probably looks the least representative of all. Much more representative is a place like Taichung, where a three-term incumbent who's won comfortably in all three races is beat badly in this election. And so there's a pretty clear swing towards the DPP, and I should say more accurately, away from the KMT in this election. And there were races that weren't even on the radar that nobody expected to be remotely close in Taoyuan and in Hsinchu City that the DPP pulled out at the last minute. And those were both huge shockers.
And Dennis, can you quickly describe for us what are some of the reasons that commentators are saying caused this sort of almost unexpected scale of win for the DPP or loss for the KMT, to be more precise?
Well, I would say DPP, the victory of DPP is not actually because DPP did anything pretty good. It's actually because they ride on the national wave of against the current incumbent party, KMT party. And also the younger generation, they dissatisfied with the current president Ma Ying-jeou. Looking back to the march in March, the Sunflower Movement, and followed by the food oil scandal, it's really hurt the current incumbent party. So I would say that explained in general that provide a terrible political climate for incumbent party, and give DPP a very good chance to win this landslide victory. But more importantly, as I said, the younger generation is the key for this election, and also the possible reason make all the prediction wrong, because the younger generation, they turn out to vote at the last minute.
I see. So with this podcast, I kind of want to focus on two questions. The first question is, as I mentioned before, in 2006, towards the last 2 years of President Chen Shui-bian, DPP's president's term, he was also highly unpopular. There was also social instability targeted against the president. And in that election in 2006, the DPP lost a lot of local seats to the KMT. Now, my question is, this year, a lot of people, especially a lot of the young people, are saying, oh, we're beyond blue and green. The traditional tectonic plates of blue and green have shifted. How much of that is true, or how much of it is just we're seeing a cycle of the president not doing a good job after 6 years, and people are just tired of him and his policies and wanted something else. How much of each factor is there?
So are we in an era of post-partisanship, or are we seeing the emergence of a new kind of third force in Taiwanese politics that does not fall along the old green-blue independence unification line? And I think evidence for that is still pretty limited at this point. I would need to see a lot more to demonstrate that we're seeing a fundamental realignment of the political system. If anything, I think the direction is in the other way. The fact that we have a large partisan swing from the KMT to the DPP suggests that there's that party labels mean more now than mm-hmm. they did 20 years ago, not less. Mm-hmm. And so this is, and then I could cite a bunch of research from public opinion, from work on partisanship in the developing world. Partisanship is generally weak when democracies are young, and it strengthens over time. Mm-hmm. And also there's a generational effect. When you're young, you have weak partisanship. And the longer you are in the political system voting, the stronger your partisanship gets. And so I think part of what we may be seeing is a whole new generation of voters flooding into the political system and participating for the first time. And so if you focus just on those young voters, yeah, they don't lean green or blue, in part because they haven't participated before. And so they're going to participate. They did in this past election. They're going to develop some partisan ties over the next few years. And I would expect us to see more partisanship down the line, not less.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we look at the 2006 and then the follow-up 2008 election, you wonder if the cycle will continue, will happen again. I would say if you only focus on one generation, for example, mm-hmm. If you only look at 35 to 45, then they probably have the very similar pattern. The cycle will happen again. But as I stressed earlier, the younger generation, as Karis mentioned, the younger generation, they have no experience in the past. So they will have different voting decision, voting behavior. So in the 2016, if we look at younger different generation, especially for younger generation, I have to say we probably will see something different. And look at the turnout. If we have the chance to look at the major component of voters in 2016, if the turnout rate is not very high, which means the traditional voters, older generation, they dissatisfy with mm-hmm. current politic situation, they won't go out to vote, then who will voice louder? It's actually the younger generation. So the younger generation's voting decision will actually change the outcome. So I will say younger generation will make difference in the mm-hmm. new next elections.
I see. So speaking of the younger generation, I actually talked to a friend, Elisa Chu. She worked on the DPP Taoyuan's commissioner candidate's youth campaign. Mm. So this campaign sort of got ramped up only in the last month of the campaign, and she was in the United States. And then the question I asked her was, when she was talking to students on campus, what was their reaction? And she said, in the beginning, a lot of them were very much, I don't know much about politics. Seemed that a lot of the fever from, a lot of the energy from the student movements in Taipei hasn't really translated down to Taoyuan.
他们会说，譬如说，是国民党的吗？如果是国民党，我就不投这样子，或者说，这个文哲嘛，你们是支持柯文哲嘛？就说他会，对，就还蛮妙。但是我们就会用这样方式去带入，就说那其实你有其他的选择，你可以选择民进党，可以选择郑文灿这样子。就觉得说，觉就是普遍的觉醒没有到那么广泛，但是大家会开始认为说国民党真的不值得信任的一点。 就是No matter who is the candidate，我觉得就是整顿，就是说哦，那个用毒有害我们啊，或者是说，可能就是我觉得一次一次的不信任吧，就是说不冒30秒的不信任，然后再加上就是 因为服贸这个东西可能对于民生来说比较远，就你这个就是跟中国之间或是台湾主体性的东西，对于一般大众他不是平常这么关心，他可能会觉得这个东西主权议题离我们还是远一点。可是事情在推进到这几个月来，对，就是黑心油事情，他们觉得说这是我每天在吃的东西，这是我民生最就是不得不接触到的东西，你都让我心对你信任瓦解了，所以这个东西我觉得几乎是让多数民众觉得我不能再给这个政府机会。
They talked to a lot of students, and then a lot of them said, well, I just don't want to vote KMT at all because they're the incumbent, and they have done a lot of, well, failed us a lot in recent memory, right? Mm-hmm. So starting with the latest, the food scandals, very much close to everyday life, the cross-strait services trade agreement, at least the way that was handled, and so on and so forth. So,how do you respond to that in the sense that do you agree as to that that's the sort of the, how the young people generally think right now, or and how would that sort of change as time goes on?
Apparently, according to this clip, apparently younger generation, they follow the cohort.
Mm-hmm.
The question is whether or not you dislike KMT, and the KMT is the incumbent, and they probably don't really understand what's going on, but as long as it's not the candidate is KMT, then they say no. But that's the message for DPP. In the next couple months, 14 months for 2016 elections, if DPP mayor, the elected mayor, then does not work quite well,it could be really hurt their 2016 elections.
Mm-hmm.
In younger generation, their political view can change immediately.
Mm-hmm.
They can be influenced easily. Mm-hmm. So it could change. Mm-hmm. So that's the message is actually tell DPP, don't be too happy. This, mm-hmm. this could be changed right away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So as sort of Carlos, you mentioned, they're new to the political process. I guess they're sort of new consumers. They're still sort of trying out the different brands of services. And now they say, well, I've seen that the KMT is not good, so I'm going to vote the other guys. But mm-hmm. if the other guys are not good, because I just haven't seen as much of them as I wish, is that...
Yeah, you know? No, I think that's very accurate. And that's how partisanship, this strong partisan attachment to one or the other of the major parties, that's how it develops over mm-hmm. time. You get experience voting for one or the other. And it turns out that the act of going to the polls and voting actually does mm-hmm. a lot to solidify your support for one or the other. You like being part of the winning team, but then performance in office, you know, there's a lot of the younger generation right now over the last couple of years has had, just as they're emerging into adulthood, they've had... Mm-hmm. A lot of worries, and they've been under a very unpopular president, and so they're likely to take a closer look at the DPP. The other thing to mention here is that partisanship doesn't just come out of nowhere either. When you are influenced a lot by your parents and your social surroundings, and so I find it interesting in this case that there's a major generational divide right now. There's that parental influence seems to be fairly weak among this group. It would be nice to have some data on this, and we'll probably get some soon. But because it's weak, that means other things are going to matter more. And mm-hmm. your peers, your social interactions with other people your age are going to have a much greater influence than on your vote choice, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything that she said in that interview is consistent with that model of how partisanship forms among young adults.
I see.
Yeah, I agree. And also, Carlos just mentioned the partisan attachment formation process in younger generation. In the past, especially in Taiwan, the political culture is like a family that your parents told you to vote for someone, right. You vote for. You will vote along with your parents' the opinions. But now, because information can easily received, the younger generation, they receive voting or election information from internet, from Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
They can easily get message, easily get information, so they learn by themselves. Think about this younger generation, they are college students, they don't live with their parents, mm-hmm. they live in other cities. They learn politics from their friends, from their students, from their fellow students, from internet, from Facebook, more than their parents. Mm-hmm. So the parents' influence weakened.
Mm-hmm.
That's the observation from this election, and I believe it will affect the future exact election as well.
Mm-hmm. So coming back to sort of this question of, it sounds like while a lot of DPP supporters are obviously very happy about the results, DPP itself shouldn't consider to have won the election. Is that sort of the sense?
Yeah, they didn't lose it.
Yeah.
And they could have, you know, to their credit, they did not make a bunch of provocative statements about cross-strait relations. They generally avoided having those debates in the party until the election was over. And that's all they needed to do in this election. They needed to not be Ma Ying-jeou and the KMT government, and they weren't. Going forward, they have to actually produce. They control jurisdictions over in which 60% of Taiwanese live now. And so they're going to have a day-to-day impact on the lives of many voters there. And so they have to deliver something tangible to those people. And they can't just be the non-KMT alternative.
Right. So I'm going to play another clip, which is from Chen Yiqi, who's the founder of the Flung Radical that we met. So his group, the Jijin Ceyi, they fielded five independent city council candidates. Four of them did not win. One of them had enough votes, but then was replaced by the mandatory quota for female legislators, for female council. So I basically put the same question to him. So do you think DPP won? How does that affect the future? And this is what he said. So also a little bit of background. Jijin Ceyi, they see themselves as sort of the most radical of the on the independent side of the political spectrum. And part of their ideology is to make the DPP more of a centrist choice.
其实我认为这一次其实国民党并没有大败啊，民进党没有大赢啊。怎么讲你知道吗？我不是跟 2006年比较，我是跟那个 2010年比较。2010是那个五都的第一次的选举，那如果是这样的话，上次的那个得票率 2010年得票率比这一次更高，民进党得票率更高。 虽然上次赢的县市没有这么多，但是得票率其实比较高。那2010的得票率那么高，民进党那么高的情形之下，2011还是选输。那2014得票率没有2010高，那2016会不会就重蹈2016的覆辙呢？这是我怀疑的一件事情。而且这次的投票率只有6成多而已，所以6成多里面就要解释说，好像显然其实
So yeah, sort of along the same lines of the just because you won at the end of 2014, 14 months later doesn't necessarily translate, that momentum doesn't necessarily automatically translate.
Right.
So the question then is, well, what should the DPP do? How should its policies or how should its positions be either adjusted or reversed even to ensure that if they want to win in 2016? And I ask this because on the one hand, people say, well, look at Ke Wen-je in Taipei. He ran this sort of, you know, teal, non-blue, non-green campaign and try to move to what we consider the middle, right? And he did very well. On the other hand, people are saying, well, a lot of these new young voters, they are opposed to free trade, they are opposed to China, they are opposed to, some might say they're even more in the pro-independence than the mainstream DPP position. So what, is the DPP stuck in the middle? Or if they want to hold on to this momentum, what should they do? What are some of the policy suggestions that you guys might make to them?
So a couple things. One is that they don't have to come out and say how they would deal with some of the national issues because they're not in power at the national level. They have that advantage. They are in power at a lot of local jurisdictions, and there the most important things are services, competency, making sure that housing prices are kept at a reasonable level. Just a lot of things that have to do with day-to-day governance rather than big ideological fights. And the DPP for a long time has struggled to move beyond ideological fights and demonstrate that it can actually govern capably. They have a golden opportunity to do that now. And so the more energy they can focus on making sure traffic runs well, the less energy they focus on kind of high-level ideological arguments about, say, the independence clause in the DPP's party charter, the better off they will be going into 2016.
Yeah, I would agree. The performance, the things they got elected in five special municipal elections, their performance, their elected mayor performance will be very critical to DPP's 2016 election. But also, as mentioned earlier, cross-strait relations is the issue they cannot avoid. For any potential candidate who want to represent DPP, she or he has to deal with cross-strait relations. How they're gonna present their idea is the key. How to expand their vote to light blue voter. I think that's a crucial point to get elected in the national elections.
Is there what about on the issue of wealth or wealth disparity, tax policy, or even sort of more social justice? Regardless of the Taiwan-China cross-race relations or national identity issues, how do you think there's a shift for the DPP to move towards the more sort of traditionally leftist wing of politics, or should they sort of I don't know, what do you think they should do?
Yeah, I think there is an opportunity for them to take up that mantle and try to make a case for a more just distribution of the gains of economic growth. And you could develop a cross-strait policy that started with that pillar of a more equitable distribution of these gains, rather than starting as Ma did with the idea that we have to hitch our economy closer to China's so that the economy as a whole grows better. There's going to be winners and losers, gains and losses from any kind of trade agreement with China. And so making the case in a convincing way that the losers from those kinds of agreements will not, they'll be justly compensated, that they'll have new opportunities that weren't there before, is that potentially puts them in a much better place than to deal with the hard cross-strait issues that they're going to have to deal with if they do make it back into power.
I think they have to, as I said earlier, they have to deal with the cross-strait relations, cross-strait policy, and all other. I will say this: the strength of DPP is actually their social policy, their welfare policy, social welfare policy. That's the strength of DPP. This is very convincing, especially for younger generation. They like to hear this. They like this idea. They like to have more social welfare policy, things like that. But the key for DPP to get support from light blue, as I said, from other part of campaign, from light blue voters, is to convince them they won't have radical change. Try to convince them it's going to be safe if DPP get elected. This is the key for DPP to get victory in 2016. Other issues is minor. Other issues is actually, well, those social welfare issues or social inequality is actually the strength of DPP. If KMT like to play social welfare card or social policy card, they will lose. This is not their strength. They have a lot of wealthy family on the stage. People won't believe they will seriously try to deal with the social inequality issues. That's the strength of DPP.
Right. I mean, I guess it's a little awkward to see Guo Taiming, Terry Guo on the stage with the KMT talking about social and I guess economic justice. But with you know, that aside, what do you have any suggestions for the KMT going forward? You know, if I guess somehow somebody nominated you to be the next KMT chairman.
God forbid.
So no thanks, but you know, other than that, what suggestions would you have for the KMT?
Completely destroy and completely start over. Reset the whole system. Mm-hmm. The KMT has a very, very old system, mechanism, party system. Everyone is like, well, just stick with the old tradition. So they need the entirely change. If any suggestion to the new leaders, well, don't try to merely focus on 2016. Try to fix your part the problem within your party first. Once you can fix the party system, once you can fix the party machine and make it work, then KMT's party machine is actually very powerful. The problem is it didn't work. It didn't function well. But if you can reset, just like we reset the computer, reset an Apple computer, it's still a Mac, it still work, it still function well. The problem is how you clean up everything and reset it.
I guess if the DPP owns the social welfare issue, I would say the KMT owns the economy issue. The KMT's reputation for success is based largely on stewarding Taiwan's economic miracle. And that was Ma's most potent selling point when he ran for president, was that he would turn the economy around and return Taiwan to the kind of level of the Asian tigers. The challenge is that Taiwan is now a developed country. You're not going to see double-digit growth rates anymore. And Taiwan is kind of in search. It's in a kind of transition period where it needs to move to a more high-tech, less export-dependent economy, or at least less kind of low on the value chain production cycle economy. And I think the KMT, the current Ma administration, realizes that and has proposed a lot of things to try to develop that next phase of Taiwan's economic growth. I think the DPP will probably have to counter that. And I'm not hearing a lot from the DPP about what they would do differently from the KMT. Right. So if you're going to rebuild the KMT, I think to focus on a coherent strategy to kind of shift Taiwan's production, and services are 70% of the economy. Services are a big issue in Taiwan, and shaking up the service industries as well. That's all. That's all things that government changes in government policy can potentially affect, and the KMT has a valence advantage on those issues still.
I see.
Also, I would suggest put all these each party's strengths aside. What we learned from this election is a lot of people actually tired of the dispute between the party, the competition between the two parties. So probably the next important balance issues is who can deliver the impression to better handle dispute between two party, who can negotiate, who can talk to both party, who can actually deal with both party. The impression is important for future leaders in Taiwan, because people tired of this for a long time, and lots of people believe that the competition between the two party actually damaged Taiwan's economic development, or at least slow the economic development. So who can deliver this impression, who can deliver this image, is also another thing. So I would suggest both party leaders, they try to commune with others, try to talk to the other side of the competitor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, that reminds me, and I think I'm going to close with this, is that there's people now are saying in the context of constitutional reform that Ma Ying-jeou should actually invite Tsai Ing-wen and have a sit down, have a meeting. I mean, what does he have to lose, right?
Mm-hmm.
True. So with that, I guess we'll definitely, I could say personally, this has been one of the most entertaining campaign seasons in recent memory. And obviously the results, if nothing, are dramatic and worth thinking about. And, you know, of course, we can all come back in 6 months and do this all over again. This is Chaitin Ye. You have been listening to the Katakalam Project on Katakalam Media. Find us on our website at katakalammedia.com. That's KetaGalanMedia.com. Or find us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Thanks for listening, and tune in next time.